Hi, I'm Gil Headley, and I'm the proud sponsor of the Anatomy and Movement Channel. Welcome. This conference is important. It's both groundbreaking and ground-building. Literally hundreds of thousands of us have gathered here to expand our experience of embodiment, and in so doing, evolve the embodied experience of our world. Embodiment is a practice that anchors us consciously into that which is common to us all, our human body. Regardless of our differences, and we have them, we all live out our lives in a body, and we're all connected by that shared experience. I've been developing integral anatomy for the past 25 years. I believe the human body is not a problem to be solved, but rather a gift to be received and explored. Integral anatomy is an approach to understanding the whole body, which emphasizes textural layers, continuities, and relationships. We notice differences not to create separation, but to appreciate that which unites us all. I'll be presenting here on the Anatomy and Movement Channel, as well as on the main stage, and I hope you'll join me to explore the heart of inner space. And for further study with me, check out my website, gilheadley.com. When you join my site, you'll automatically receive 3 free full-length courses because I'm on a mission to share what I've learned through my own deep exploration of the human form. And I'm certain that these courses will enhance and transform your own embodiment practice. I hope you enjoy the presentation.
Thank you so much to Gil Headley for sponsoring this channel. I personally very much enjoy geeking out on his anatomy offerings. I'd like to remind everybody that we are using Zoom webinar, so it may be a different format than you are used to. You will not be able to turn on your microphone or your videos. Okay, I'm so happy to introduce Jamie Smith. Coach Jamie Smith is the founder and head sport preparation coach of the U of Strength. As a former athlete of Merrimack College, he graduated with a degree in sports medicine and a concentration in exercise physiology. Jamie has worked with a variety of athletes from novice to the elite skill levels, some of which include current NHL, NBA, and MLS players, and the 2011 NCAA Men's Basketball National Champion, UConn Huskies. Jamie's passion is guiding his athletes through their individual developmental processes, creating unique learning environments that blend physical preparation with skill acquisition. He firmly believes in training the complete athlete by utilizing social, emotional, and psychological influences as integral pieces of his program design. And he is perhaps best known for bringing the chaotic environment of competitive sports into his training facility. This talk will explore how your traditional approach to sports preparation focuses on a number of skills that don't necessarily transfer to performance in the chaotic sporting environment. With a one-size-fits-all technical model, there will be minimal variability and creativity required of the athletes, which will not produce the adaptable problem solvers needed to excel in competition. His presentation will outline what is your coaching lens, what is a skilled athlete, and the missing piece of the athletic developmental puzzle. If you have any questions during the session from time to time, Jamie may ask. If you have questions, you can click on the raise hand icon at the bottom of the screen. If you have any other questions, please type them in the Q&A box. Check to first see if your question has already been asked and you can upvote it. And then I'll pass them along to Coach Jamie at the right time. And for any technical questions, please type in the chat privately to our tech host, Abby, who is wonderful in supporting us on the Zoom webinar. Okay, I pass the mic on over to you, Coach Jamie. Thank you so much. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it. All right. Hi, everyone. All right. My name is Jamie Smith. All right. And today my topic is drill less, learn more, creating unique learning environments for the developmental athlete. All right. So who am I? First and foremost, I am a proud husband and father, all right, to my 4-year-old Hadley and a very spoiled Boston Bulldog Bella. I am certified through the Strength and Conditioning Association. I am the head sport prep coach and the owner of the U of Strength, where we focus on human and athletic development. All right. I am a lifelong learner who is open to new sport preparation ideas as long as they benefit my athletes. All right. Who I train. Okay. At the U of Strength, we primarily work with team sport athletes, whether it's from the youth level all the way up to the professional level. Majority of the athletes are from the basketball and hockey world, but we do have experience with football, soccer, baseball, lacrosse, volleyball, wrestlers, ice skaters, BMX competitors, swimmers, you name it, we work with them. Okay, what can you expect from my presentation? All right, this is going to be a culmination of my beliefs and designs based on personal experiences with team sport athletes at the high school, postgraduate level, and those familiar with in the hockey world, all right, the junior level. All right. These are my current ideas and thought process at this given moment. You will see examples of my work through actual videos of real athletes in real training sessions. All right. And you will have an opportunity to challenge, discuss, and question any of these unorthodox ideas. Okay. And I'd like to start this presentation off with a question. Okay. What is your coaching lens? And I think it's really important that I give you as much background information, as much context before I get into the meat and potatoes of my practice design or my program design. So what is your coaching lens? All right. There is six traditional coaching lenses, you know, whether that's the powerlifting lens. All right. So when you're working with an athlete, you know, what lens are you looking through? Whether it's powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting, bodybuilding, track and field, functional, all right, or more corrective kind of physical therapy. All right. I'm not saying any one of these lenses are wrong. All right. We can take great elements from each. All right. But I'm here today to talk about a new lens, a lens that I look through, you know, when I have the pleasure working with an athlete. And this is a skilled centered lens. All right. And I like you to think of the skilled centered lens as a bridge. One side of the bridge is the physical preparation side. All right. The other side is the sport and the sport coach. And with the skill center lens, what I'm trying to do is real simply, I'm trying to take a couple steps, a couple more steps, and maybe a little more steps over that bridge. All right. So instead of just staying in my silo on the other side, all right, I'm trying to cross that bridge. All right. And I'm trying to meet that sport coach. All right. While at the same time, trying to get that sport coach to meet me halfway. All right. And this is really, really important that we're not operating in silos. Okay. This has got to be, you know, a holistic approach. And so hopefully with some of these ideas I talk about today, you're going to see why this is so important. All right. So this is a real important definition. What is a skilled athlete? Okay. A skilled athlete is one that makes the game look easy and fluid. Okay. They make the game look effortless. All right. They understand when to perform specific movement patterns based on the information provided by the environment. That could be teammates, opponents, where the ball or puck is located, where the goal is located, where are they in relationship to the field and their boundaries. Okay. They can discover consistent movement solutions for varying sport movement problems in an adaptable way. And this adaptability is very, very important. And lastly, no two reps in sport are the same. So slight movement differences are essential for efficient interactions within this ever-changing dynamic sporting environment. Okay. Then I want to take a closer look at sporting movements, all right, and how I classify the different movements that occur on the field of play. All right. Movement is context specific. All right. It's task oriented or goal oriented, where it involves the interaction with an opponent or teammate. All right. There is anticipation and or reactive element. It is varied and requires an expansive movement skill toolbox. All right. And lastly, it's not always performed at max speeds. All right. It requires optimal speeds with control and precision. All right. Traditional physical preparation only counts for part of the puzzle. All right. And what I want to do right now is I want to read this quote at the top, because this has been very impactful and influential in my change in how I view our practice design, our training sessions, okay? Sport is a problem-solving activities where movements are used to produce the necessary solutions. Now, this is from the late, great Dr. Yuri Verkhoshansky. I read this quote 10, 12 years ago, had no idea what it meant, all right? 3 years ago, I reread that, and I had that aha moment, all right? Because like I said, traditional physical preparation only accounts for part of the puzzle. And when you look at the human movement system, I love the three Bs from Sean Mishka. You have the brain, the biomechanics, and the behavior. Or you have the perception, the action, okay, and the intentions. All right. We need to incorporate this perceptual cognitive training. All right. It's just critical. All right. Where the focus isn't just on the biomechanics or the motor outputs, but also on the inputs, all right? The sensory information, whether that's visual, auditory, tactile, all right, and the role this plays in athletic development and skill acquisition. All right. It's very, very important. All right. Then what type of information does your training provide? All right. And you're going to constantly hear this word information. And hopefully by the end of this presentation, you're going to realize that this information is essential. Okay. All right. Because the key to learning is not rehearsing or memorizing movement patterns, but instead learning how to solve problems. All right. The objective of any training activity should be to exploit the information provided by the environment, the task, the opponent, the current situation. And as a coach, we want to manipulate those constraints to create affordances, which will guide the athlete to authentic movement strategies. And remember that word authentic. All right. And my problem solving activities are a way, and I'm going to give a bunch of examples in a little bit, are a way to introduce and provide, all right, this contextual information to the athletes. All right. Now, with the constraints-led approach, all right, this plays a huge role. And I truly believe that many coaches should gain a better understanding of this CLA, all right, which was created by Carl Newell in 1986. All right. And it's real simple. It's just the idea of how movements are developed, how they emerge, all right? And it's the interaction of three different factors, all right? We have the individual, the environmental, and the task, all right? And as a coach, we need to take into consideration all three, all right? I'm gonna go into a lot of detail about task constraints and how we manipulate them at the U of Strength, but I wanna make one note on the importance of the individual constraints, all right? Because especially when working with a developmental athlete, you might have one athlete on a Monday, and then they come in on a Friday, and they might be a completely new athlete, whether they improve their strength, their power, their speed, their coordination, whatever it may be, we need to factor in these internal constraints, all right? Because all three of these interact with one another, and if one changes, all right, that's going to change the motor strategies or the outputs. All right. Task constraint manipulation. As a coach, this is the most practical that we can control. All right. This is a key component to my activities design and application. All right. These constraints will manipulate the information provided and create affordances that will guide the athlete's movement motor responses. All right. And this whole idea of affordances is a big fancy word. All it is, it's opportunities or invitations for actions where an athlete can accept that invitation or can reject it. All right. We utilize these constraints, all right, as a way to customize the rep and make sure that the information is appropriate, the level of challenge is appropriate for different skill levels. All right. And just here are some examples. We'll go into much more, but some simple and practical examples are size of workspace, number of athletes, training implements, obstacles, the duration of the rep, all right, or the amount and the source of this sensory information. All right. And the construction process, all right, is completely dependent on the coach's understanding of sport, the common problems that emerge, and having a creative mind. All right. So now, how do I design problem-solving activities? All right. Learning design, all right. The information, situations, and tasks need to be specific, but not too specific. And this is where some other coaches might disagree with me. But for my current situation with working with different skill levels, different sporting backgrounds, and whether they're in season or out of season, we don't want to get too specific where we're utilizing sport specific implements. Okay. Because the primary information for every team sport athlete is just another human being. It's the opponent. Okay. Not only will another athlete act as this specific or contextual information, but it will also create a competitive environment. It will increase the engagement. It will improve the buy-in to your program. All right. The energy is through the roof, which you will see in some of these videos. All right. Athletes, in my opinion, athletes need to practice and exposure to extracting and attuning, right? Becoming aware to these key information sources created by the opposing player, teammate, environment, and situation.
Excuse me, right. Jamie, we can't see the slides.
You can't see? You still can't see them?
No, I mean, you're doing great. It's just that you said we're gonna do videos. So make sure you have the share screen at the bottom.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought I hit that. Where?
No, it's okay. You're doing awesome. And then you said videos. I was like, okay.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry, where?
It's the green button at the bottom of the screen that says share screen. If you click on that, yep, it'll give you the option of choosing your PowerPoint and then just hit share. Oh, perfect.
Okay. It's great. I want to miss out on the videos. Thank you.
Okay, my apologies. All right. Okay. All right, boom, boom, boom. So continuous exploration, all right, of this perceptual motor landscape will develop the capacity for adaptive movements and functional solutions, all right? And it's important to understand that most athletes are going to struggle when first introduced to an activity that encourages exploration, creativity, all right, and decision-making. And early exposure to these activities will only allow for further development down the road. All right, another key component. And we talked about the environmental constraints, and this is something we personally do at the U of Strength, is that we factor in the training surface. And here are some examples that I currently use, and we will manipulate, and again, you will see in the videos, whether it's the outdoor turf, indoor turf, rubber flooring, pavement, basketball courts, hills, all right, we need to factor these in because the training surface is going to influence movement behaviors. All right. And now to give even more context. So like I stated that we work with team sport athletes, all right. It's primarily an invasion sport where one team is trying to invade the territory of another team. All right. And so because of this, all right, we want them capable of solving problems in both offensive and defensive situations. And it's through these experiences that the athletes will develop solutions through the lens of both roles. But in my opinion, more importantly, gain an appreciation for the opponent's movement aims and strategies, all right? And now I want to break down the movement aims or the offensive versus defensive intentions. Offensive intentions, they want to make the defense overcommit. They want to force them into a disadvantageous position, all right? Very simple. They want to be able to create space, and they want to challenge these perceptual cognitive skills. Well, on the flip side, all right, the defense, they want to make the offense predictable. They want to disrupt them from achieving their task. They want to maintain advantageous positions, and they want to close down space. All right. Then I'd like to take it another step further, all right? And when I'm creating these activities, all right, whether I'm watching, you know, my four-year-old play her first time on the soccer field, or I'm watching the NBA finals or a football game on Sunday, all right, when I'm watching these sports, I like to break it into this team sport role classification, all right, where there's kind of four different components, where we look at offense with the ball, offense without the ball, defense on the ball, and defense off the ball, all right? And what this does, in my opinion, is a very effective way, all right, when planning learning environments for various team sport athletes at the same time. All right. Offensive versus defensive movements. All right. In the past, and like most coaches, I wanted to micromanage everything. All right. So I would try to create an activity or create a drill that forces athletes to do something. All right. Making it very predictable, very pre-planned, in my opinion, very robotic. All right. But now I encourage exploration of all the different motor strategies. And instead, teach the importance of truly understanding, okay, and appreciating the intention, all right, for each, the offensive and defensive lens, okay? And when you look at the offensive role, very simply, they want to develop strategies that include some type of deceptive action, all right? This is going to require an efficient first step, change of direction, and change of speed abilities, all right? Where the defensive role, they want to discover strategies that manipulate time and space, allow for frequent movement adjustments, and continuous perception of the opponents, teammates, and ever-changing situations, all right? Because this is going to require the athlete to become very proficient in maintaining effective positions where the athlete can perform a subsequent action at any moment in various directions and with whatever movement pattern, all right? All of our practice situations, every session, is going to be a wide range of different situations, all right, with role-specific tasks, all right, because I look at each rep as a learning opportunity where the athletes can gain the experience of effective, but at the same time, ineffective movement strategies. And this whole idea of being unsuccessful or failure is extremely important, all right, because this is going to allow for continuous expansion of the athlete's movement solution toolbox. All right. And you will see, all right, in these upcoming videos that we follow the concept of repetition without repetition. All right. This does play a major role in with how we manage the situations and the problems presented to the athlete. All right. And for some that understand this idea of repetition without repetition, they might think it's very complicated, very chaotic, and it might not work for their current situation. All right. But honestly, you can just making slight changes rep to rep is going to go a long way in developing, you know, these different movement skills. All right. And this could be starting stances, the starting direction and angles, distances, speeds, the location and number of barriers, size of workspace, shape of those workspace or boundaries, number of opponents or teammates, time, all right, upper body positioning, surfaces, footwear, the ball types, and you will see all of these in the upcoming videos. All right. And lastly, before I share the videos, I want to go over each session. We have a theme, okay? And it might just be one of these or it might be all five, all right? But these themes are really teaching the athlete to understand the importance of being comfortable in uncomfortable conditions. Because the ability to get out of an unfavorable position or situation, all right, by self-organizing into an effective position or movement strategy is essential for sport that, in my opinion, is often overlooked. The second theme is managing uncertainty. All right. We teach our athletes to avoid being in reactive situations. Instead, we want the offense and defense to possess a proactive mindset. All right. Instead of reacting to an opponent, we want them making strategic adjustments to manipulate and force the opponent into predictable scenarios. All right. And then the third is a real simple appreciating space, whether that's through the offensive lens where we're going to create space or through the defensive lens where we're going to close that space down, or what we teach the athletes, we want to get into their bubble. All right. Those two are very, very important. All right. And next is respecting speed. All right. And again, I'm not saying speed isn't important, and we will talk about this in a little bit later, but we need to respect that speed. Okay. The best solution, and this is something we tell the athletes all the time, the best solution isn't always the fastest response, but the appropriate response, where the athlete is responding to the correct information at the right time and at the ideal speed. Okay. And lastly, this idea of team synergies. And I don't see this in many physical preparation settings, which you will see. We put a huge emphasis in this idea of team synergies, or what this idea of shared affordances, where the teammates' decisions and actions will directly influence their own responses and vice versa. And this is ongoing. All right. So now what I would like to do is we're going to start giving some examples. Okay. You're going to see when we first start off, All right. They're very simple. And again, we don't, all of this is open. There's always that interaction with another human being, but you're going to see how we manipulate the information. All right. And how we scale, the information to change that level of challenge, to change the complexity. All right. And ultimately change these different motor problems. All right. So here in this first one, let me do this. All right. This is a 1VO. Okay. And so what you're going to see here, all right, the athlete, all right, that's facing away from the other athlete here. All right. He's the opponent. All right. But he's basically, all he's going to do is he's just going to turn his body. So he's basically, we call this a starting stance. All right. And this guy, this athlete right here, all right, he's the one, he's the defender. All right. He's the person performing the repetition. Okay. And what's going to happen is as he approaches, all right, there's a whistle blown by a coach. As that whistle is blown, all right, a color is called. And you're going to see on the athlete's body, we have a yellow flag and we have a blue flag. And whichever color is called, really simple, they make a decision, they make a cut left or right. Okay. And then we're going to add a ball in play. Okay. So this is one way. All right. We're adding information. All right. Where we have one thrower, which is here. Okay. And I'll continue to play this video. All right. We have one thrower. All right. And real simple, whatever ball color is thrown, all right, they need to match the flag color on the belt in that same direction. And real simple, make a decision, cut left or right. And here, now we're adding a second. Okay, we're adding two throwers. All right, so we're adding more information. All right, where we're trying to challenge decision making. All right, and now in these examples here, all right, another way, now the athlete is taking a step. All right, so instead of turning with a flag belt and being basically stationary, now they're stepping left, right, forwards, or backwards. So we're opening up more different directions for that initial movement. All right, and so the athlete that is performing the rep, now they need to respond in the opposite direction of the step. And I'll replay that so you guys can see. All right, again, the focus is on decision-making, all right, where they're responding in the opposite direction of the step. All right, and then lastly here, this is one of the last 1VOs, all right, we're basically doing the same idea where we have multiple throwers, okay, and we have multiple directions, all right? So let me continue to play it. All right, so same idea, they gotta catch the ball. All right. And then wherever that flag color is, they're going in that direction. You can notice that the person in the middle, they don't have the flags on the sides anymore. All right. They had it on the front and back hip. All right. So we're just trying to add more information, increase the level of challenge. All right. So this is something we will do with lower skill level athletes returning from an injury, athletes that are very foreign to a lot of these ideas. Whether we run this for a week, one session, two sessions, three sessions. All right. This is one of our initial starting activities. Okay. Then we're going to go into an activity where we're increasing the cognitive load. Okay. And with this, all right, when I say 1v1, 1v2, 1v3, that first number is going to represent the defense. That second number is going to represent the offense. So here we have a 1v1, 1v2, or 1v3 situation. Okay. And what's going to happen is at the start, the offense, and I'm just going to pause it a second, the offense is starting on this side. So they're starting in their territory away from the goals, where the defense is starting on their side. All right. And there's goals along this side right here. Okay. And what's going to happen is at the start of each rep, the offense is going to predetermine whether one, two, or three athletes attack, okay? And you will see in the middle of this workspace, we have three different ball colors, all right? And only one athlete is really simple, gonna retrieve the ball. What the defense has to do, they have to read, recognize who gets the ball, what ball color is it, and you'll notice on their belts, they have three different colors. So the defense has to match the ball color with the flag color, all right? And try to grab that flag before that offense gets through the goals, which you will see. All right. So here, real simple, that's a 1v1. All right. And you can see the two big orange cones at the end. That's the goal where the offense is trying to get through. All right. And you will see as we get this going, all right, it's going to be 1v1s, 1v2s, 1v3s. and you'll notice the offense, they're starting at different locations. You'll notice that those cones, we will change the spacing of their initial setup. All right. Now you see that's a 1v2. You see the defense changing their starting location and starting stance. All right. Now this is back to a 1v1, and it's really important. I am not telling them to do any of this. I'm encouraging them to determine their own situations. All right. Their own movement patterns. All right. Allow them to express their creativity. All right. And you can see, so now we're adding, you know, multiple opponents on the offensive side. All right. All right. So this is just one example of how we increase the cognitive load. All right. And really simple, just you got to match the ball color. All right. With the flag color. All right. So now we'll get into, all right, a simple 1v1. All right. And in this 1v1, we're varying the workspace. All right. We're varying the boundary shapes. And what you're going to see is that these two athletes are connected by, it's called an evasion belt. All right. And this is one of our favorite training tools and teaching tools. And you will see in this example here, okay, the athletes, the offense starts the rep. Okay. And this blue circle, that's the workspace. All right. And so the athlete has a predetermined time, and it was 2 to 5 seconds. All right. And the coach chose that time. Okay. It was 2 to 5 seconds where the offense had to break the belt and the defense had to try to keep that belt together that entire time. Okay. And you'll notice that as we move from rep to rep, we're changing the boundary shapes. And this one here, you will see that, that we're using the lines on the soccer field. All right. In this example, this is the big yellow circle. So you're going to see different speeds. All right. More aggressive change of directions. But the offensive task in this one was to break the belt, and the defensive task was to keep the belt together. All right. In whatever time limit it was between 2 and 5 seconds. All right. So this is another very simple entry level 1v1. Okay. Then this next one, okay, it's still a 1v1, but what we'll do is we manipulate the sensory information at the start, all right? And so what I mean by the sensory information is that whether the athlete receives some type of tactile information, so some type of touch at the start, or some type of verbal, all right, so auditory information, we are encouraging, all right, that initial offensive athlete, which you'll see, all right, to manipulate that starting information. All right. And depending on which one the offense provides. So if it's a touching, all right, start, the role stay the same, where if they say their name or they make some type of noise, all right, the roles actually change. Offense goes to defense, defense goes to offense. All right. And so here's an example. All right. We have these four smaller orange cones. All right. These cones are just boundaries. So we have a small workspace. All right. And then we have these two bigger orange cones. These are two different goal options for the offense. I'm not directing them any which way. They can choose which one they want to go through. All right. And you will see that this person right here, the defense, all right. And I apologize, he is facing away. You can't see it, but his eyes are closed. So he is not sure where the offense is coming from. All right. Or is the offense going to give them, all right, like I said, is it going to be that tactile information with touch, or is it going to be that auditory information where they call out something? Okay. And if it's touch, the roles stay the same. If it's auditory, the roles change. All right. And so in this example is a very simple touch. So once that offense gave that touching information, it's go time. Okay. So the defensive athlete opens their eyes, makes a decision. All right. And then it's go time. All right. And you will see, here's another touching one. All right. That was an auditory. So that was an auditory. Auditory information, auditory start. So the roles changed. So the defense now is offense, and the offense is now is defense. All right. And one of our strategies, all right, this is going to kind of get a little confusing when they get going here, but we add another 1v1 into the mix. So it's just one way to add another layer of information. All right. So whether it's two 1v1s or we did three 1v1s in this example. All right. This is not a 2v2 or 3v3. There are two and three separate 1v1s going at the same time. All right. So that initial opponent stays the initial opponent. All right. So whether it was touch or auditory, and then it's go time. All right. This is a very challenging activity. All right. But again, we're connecting all of our movements with a variety of sensory with a variety of sensory information. All right, here's a touch. All right, and you can see here the defense was encouraged to change their starting stance, whether it was stationary or what we call a drop-in, where they're moving forwards, they're moving backwards. All right, so they're not stationary. We encourage that as well. All right. Then the next video here. All right, this is another 1v1. All right, and what's going to happen is that we are actually using mini gates, which I'll explain in 1 second. But here we go. This first person here, all right, that's the defender. All right, the person behind is the offense. The defense is starting from a drop-in. And then once the defense turns their hips, all right, it's go time. The offense can attack. They can go left or right. Again, I am not telling them anything. They can choose left side, right side. But one thing that we can do as a coach, all right, is that we can manipulate these what I call mini gates, these multicolor cones on the ground here, all right? We can change those locations to guide the responses, whether the athlete continues to go left, they continue to go to their strong side, maybe we change the mini gates to their weak side. So they have to go, all right, through, you know, the opposite direction of where they really want to go. But anyway, so here, once the defense turns, it's go time, all right? And so you can see here, the offense breaks, gets through a mini gate, okay? And these, again, mini gates are these multicolored cones. They need to get through that mini gate and then get through one of the bigger orange cones, where the defensive task is to grab that opponent's flag. All right, and you can see also on these flag belts, and I'll do my best to pause it right here, you'll notice that this athlete right here has 3 flags on his belt. This athlete here only has 1, okay? And the reason for that is this athlete has more experience, is a little bit faster, a little bit stronger, more powerful. So he is at a disadvantage. So we're putting more flags on his belt, all right? Where the other athlete, a little bit less experience, a little bit slower, all right? He's got 1 flag on his belt. So it's just one way by manipulating these constraints, these task constraints, to try to make sure the situation is appropriate, you know, for each given athlete. I'll show you one more example. Turns, the offense goes, all right, he misses the mini gate, and so now the defense was able to grab the flag. See, the defense is changing their starting location. All right, so that's another 1v1. Okay, now we're going to get into some different situations, so different than 1v1s, all right? Because a lot of times when I talk to coaches and I see a lot of these open environments, these chaotic environments, they kind of just stay with 1v1s. You're going to see different 1v1, 2v1s in a bunch of different other situations, okay? So here, all right, really simple. Let me move it back. All right, this athlete that's starting at half field, that person is on offense. These two athletes right here facing, all right, the camera are on defense, all right? At the start of the rep, these defenders, they had to communicate whether one guy turns or both guys turn, okay? If one athlete turns, all right, then the offense has to attack the same side that defense turns. And you'll see there's goals on left and right sides, all right? But if if one defender turns, offense has to attack on that side. Where if both defenders turn, the offense has both goal options, which you'll see. So here, all right, one athlete turns. So now this offense has to attack the same side, which you'll see right here. Those are the goals, those orange cones. All right, defense turns, boom, using these, and you'll see the recycling bins. All right, these recycling bins we use as barriers. All right, so it's just one way, again, to add a little information, but really to see whether the offense can use them to their advantage, whether the defense can use them to their advantage. All right, it's just another way to add a little more information into these learning environments. All right, now here you'll see both athletes turn. The offense can go in any one of the goals, all right? And you can just see the different changes of directions, all right? The energy, all right? How these athletes are competing. There's no cone drill that's going to replicate this, all right? Again, so it's real simple, just one-on-one here, all right? And this will be the last one, all right? Again, only one-on-one, so he's got that athlete, the offense has to attack that same side goal, okay? So those were 1v1s and 2v1s. Okay. And we're going to continue this idea. Excuse me. We're going to continue this idea of 1v1s and 2v2s, but you're going to see, all right, how the design is going to influence, all right, those movement patterns, okay, or the motor problems. All right. So here we have two athletes starting at the half field line. One's offense, one's defense. All right. The athletes were instructing that the defense was going to always start the rep. All right. So as the defense moves, the offense goes. All right. On this side over here, okay, on the opposite side, we have some goals. And you're going to see that there's what we call a dynamic barrier. Okay. There's a person, all right, that is basically going to be standing in front of the two different goal options. And what's going to happen, all right, as this, as the offense and defense moves, this barrier, now you see him come into the video, all right, has two different options. He can either leave the goals and become a defender. And if he leaves the goals and becomes a defense, then that initial offense and defense, their roles switch. All right. And so now the offense becomes the defense becomes the offense. Okay. Or, and you'll see this in another video, if the barrier stays there, okay, the roles stay as is. And it's a very simple 1v1. All right. So he came out. So the roles changed. Okay. Here we go. All right. So this now the athlete in the blue here. Okay. The athlete in the blue. All right. He's staying a barrier. So he decided to step to the big goal side. So now the offense remains the offense. So it's a simple 1v1. And now the offense has to find that open goal. All right. Or that small goal side. All right. Make that decision. All right. And get his body through the goals. And you can see, again, we're using flags where the defense is trying to grab the flag. All right. Here again. So the barrier decided to come out. He got caught and the offense was able to score. All right. Same idea. We'll give you one more. Barrier comes out. All right. So now it's a 2v1 and that offense was successful on that rep. Okay. And then lastly, I'll show you another 1v1, 2v and 2v1 situation. All right. Where we change the location of the goals. All right. We change the distance that the goals are placed. All right. And in this example, the two guys in front, okay, these two athletes in front are the defense. The guy in the back is the offense. And again, very similar to that first activity we showed for the 1v1 and 2v1 situation. All right. Whichever defense turns, the offense has to attack that side. If both defenders turn, then the offense can go either goal. Okay. And again, the defense is trying to obtain the flag and the offense is trying to get through the goals without losing a flag. And I'll let this run. And you're going to see the goals start close. And you'll see how this influences, okay, the different movement patterns. Now we're starting to move the goals away a little bit. All right, and a little bit more. All right, so in this example, both defenders turn. All right, lost his balance, which is okay. Now he can score on either one of the goals. Okay, and this will be the last one. So one guy turns. He's attacking that same side. All right, now we're going to flip it and give you an example of 1v2s, okay? So one defense, two offense, all right? In this example, all right, the guy right here in the blue, okay, he's the defense. The guy in the white here, he's the offense. The guy behind the blue here, he's another offense. So we have a second offensive athlete starting outside the defense's visual field, okay? We told the athletes that the offense had to start every single rep. And you will see we have two other athletes. All right. These guys are just barriers. So they're just standing there to just add more information. And what's going to happen is that only one offense can go past one of these two barriers. All right. While the other offense is a distraction. And you're going to see with the defense, if they get out of position, if they overcommit, if they focus too much of their attention on one, you know, they're going to be unsuccessful. And again, we have two goal options where the offense can go either way. All right. Here we go. Good. And so when the offense, if the offense was a distraction, the offense was not allowed to pass, which I'll show you on this one here. The offense was not allowed to pass one of these barriers. Okay. All right, now we're going to move along and you're going to see how we start to add more. There's more information. We're increasing the different motor problems. And this one, this is a 1v1, 1v2, 2v1, and 2v2 situation. Okay, the guys in the middle, these guys are dynamic barriers. Okay, so they're encouraged to step in any direction, left, right, forwards, backwards, diagonal. Okay, the athlete closest to the goals, these big orange cones, all right, they are the defense. The athlete on the opposite side, all right, is the offense, all right? And you're going to see the defense starts facing away. This was by design. So we allow I don't want the defense to exactly know where the offense is starting, all right? So they have to do their best to attune to all this information as quickly and as effectively as possible, all right? So we start simple with a 1v1. So the athlete turns, the athlete in the green's on offense, all right, and real simple, the offense is trying to use those barriers to their advantage to create space and get through the goals. All right, another 1v1. All right, using the barriers again, all right, and the defense is trying to ignore those barriers. All right, so now here, 2v1, we got two defenders, one offense. All right, and again, you can just see the overall engagement, the buy-in, the energy. There's nothing like it. It's unbelievable. All right. So again, that's a 2v1. All right. And big thing, especially when the offense is at a disadvantage, really teaching them to be patient. Now here, okay, now it's a 1v2. All right. In the 1v2, instead of the defense having to get both athletes' flags, they have to find the red flag. So whoever has a red flag, what we tell our athletes is that's the person with the ball or puck. That's who you need to get. Okay. And now here's a 2v2. All right, where they have to get both flags. All right, so now we're going to have to work so now this is a very simple team situation, but now again, we're just adding another human body, which is increasing the information. It's adding more potential motor problems. Okay. Now here, all right, again, so we're adding more situations. This is a 1v1, 2v1, 3v1, and 4v1 activity. All right, and what you're going to see, the athlete that starts in the middle here, all right, that athlete is on offense. You'll see we'll have four other athletes, all right, in four different goal options. All right, at the start of the rep, the defense was encouraged had to pick one athlete, all right, to attack the offense. It could be one athlete, it could be two athletes, it could be three athletes, or it could be all four, okay? And depending on the number of athletes that enter in, all right, those goals were considered open and the offense can score on those goals. So if only one defender leaves, the offense can only score on one of those on that open goal. If all four leave, then they can score on all four. They have four different options and you will see any hesitation and they're done. All right. And you'll see that we slowly start to increase the workspace size again, to influence these movement behaviors. All right. So that three guys left on that one. And you're going to see here, again, all four guys left on that one. All right. And so this is a very difficult activity. All right. Where the offense, again, we're really trying to teach the offense, all right, to make a decision and go with it. There's no hesitation. We want them to just attack it. All right. And that's really, really, really important, especially when the workspace was smaller. All right. And you can see now the workspace is getting bigger. All right, which is allowing for different actions to occur. All right, now you can see also that the offense is changing their starting location, whether they start inside or whether they drop in. Again, we're giving all these different options for the athletes to choose from. Okay. All right, now here we're going to give some examples of defensive constraints. All right, so in this example here, this is a 1v1 and 2v1 situation. All right, the athlete that starts in the middle here, okay, that's starting at center court, they're the offense. They could either start in the center court or they can start from one of the sidelines and drop in, okay, so they can run or sprint in, all right? One defense had to turn, okay? Whichever defender turned initially, all right, the offense had to attack that side, all right? But where the defensive constraint comes in is that whichever defender didn't turn, okay, their task is to obtain the offense's flag. Where their teammate, that guy that initially turns, all right, their job was to manage the offense, keep them in front of them, make their movements predictable so that their teammate could then go be successful and grab the offense's flag, okay? And the offensive task, as always, is to try to get through the goals without losing a flag. All right, so the defense turns, the offense attacks. All right, so the defense was not successful there. All right, so here, the defense was successful. He was able to stop the offense. All right, and you can see the athlete in blue, his task is to grab that flag. All right, and so again, another way, this is in a very simple teammate situation where you're relying the decisions and actions, your teammates' decisions and actions are going to influence your own, okay, which is something we teach on a daily basis, okay? All right, now here, there's time constraints. Okay, I'm going to turn the video down a little bit. With these, depending on the size of the workspace, okay, depending on the size of workspace, determined whether we had a 3, 4, or 5 second time limit. All right. What you're going to notice though, all right, that the defense had to compete and had to solve problems with their hands behind their back. All right. So this is one way, again, to constrain, all right, and to influence the motor patterns, all right, where the defense was doing everything they can to keep the offense from scoring in the goals, and the offense had to try to get their body through the goals prior to that time, prior to that time limit. All right. And again, this is outside in the middle of the winter, all right, where it snowed the night before. So the training surface was a little slick, as you can see here. All right. But again, we're using all these different constraints to influence the athlete's, movement patterns. All right. And so you can just see that defense is keeping their hands behind their back, doing everything they can, all right, to beat the offense to the space, all right, to keep them from getting to those goals. All right, this is a very, very simple, but this is one way, all right, if you want to manipulate speeds or aggressive change of directions, this is a very simple way to do that, whether you're in season or at the beginning of an off season, this is one of our go-tos, okay? And so those were time constraints, all right? Now, here's a example of a workspace constraint. Okay. In this example here, we started off with a 1v1. All right. The athlete in blue is on offense. The athlete in white's on defense. All right. We're on a basketball court. Okay. The offense, all right. And the offense had a predetermined time, whether it's 3, 4, or 5 seconds. And that was all dependent on the matchup. Okay. They had a predetermined time, time frame to break their belt. Okay. And the same thing for the defense. If the offense broke the belt prior to that time, prior to whatever it was, 3 or 4 or 5 seconds, then the offense could then attack the goals. And you will see is that once they start to attack, we have multicolor cones along this 3-point line. All right. The offense was not allowed to enter the 3-point line, but they had to go through a mini gate in order to enter under this white line here. Okay. And if the defense, okay, was successful at the beginning. So if it was 3 seconds and that belt was still together, okay, then that defense could grab the offense's flag. Okay. If the offense was successful and broke the belt, okay, the teammate, you will see there's an athlete right here on the sideline, the teammate that was entering in as a defender, they had to grab the flag, where this initial defender had to do everything they can to keep that offense in front of them and make their movements predictable. So you'll see here.
1, 2, 3.
Slow-mo here. All right. So you'll see these multicolor cones on this 3-point line. All right. The offense was successful on that one. So that second defender had to grab the flag. All right. And you'll just see by using these workspace constraints. All right. And I know this one is tough to kind of tough to see, but using the three-point line here, you will see that this is going to encourage and force without the coach telling them different bending turns, different curved actions, which in my opinion is really important in team sport athletics. Okay. And you'll see the offense here. We have the offensive task. They had to read that dynamic barrier again. So the guy that's right here in the blue, so they could step left or right. Offense had to read it and get their body through the goals without losing the flag. All right. And again, this is one way we use these mini gates, what we call workspace constraints, all right, to add a secondary task to the offense. So the offense, if the offense broke the belt, they can't just put their head down and go. All right. They have to be very strategic with their movement patterns. We'll show you one more example here. Here, the defense was successful. All right. So he exceeded the 5-second time limit. And so now the defense could grab the flag at any point. All right. And I think it's important to explain here that in order for the guy, so that second defender that was outside these boundaries, the basketball court, the black lines, in order for that guy to enter, that belt had to be broken. Okay. So if that belt never broke, then that defense is not allowed to come in. Okay.
Coach Jamie, we're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay.
We do have one question if you can answer in the next minute.
Yeah. Yep.
How can you apply this to individual sports such as cycling, climbing, and dancing?
Yes, absolutely. So in my opinion, and so obviously the training age, the experience level is going to play a huge factor into this. But what I tell, because I get this question a lot, because we work with golfers, downhill skiers, swimmers. We want to train the human being before the athlete. And what I tell parents and athletes is that we're trying to develop awesome human beings. And so everything we do is general, you know, whether it's the general skills, general processes, everything is general. So it's, in my opinion, and what I've seen, underpins anything specific. So whether it's 1v1s, 2v2s, 3v3s, we put our athletes into those situations. All right. Because we are developing general skills that, in my opinion, they are not getting, they're not receiving, they're not learning, you know, on their own or in their sporting environment. So it's just looking at it from a generality standpoint. We put our golfers, like I said, we put them in all these situations. All right. We're not going to throw them in to some of these more advanced right away. All right. There is a progression, which I don't like the word progression, but there is, we do scale it to make sure the information is appropriate. But this whole idea of, you know, sports specific training or, we're human beings. We got to be able to do all these different, you know, these different skills, these different qualities, these different processes. In my opinion, we need to be constantly developing them.
Great. I know as a former college athlete and for my personal movement practice now, I greatly appreciate this approach of embracing the full human potential. So thank you so much. I know some of you have more questions. You can continue this conversation on the private Facebook group created for this channel, TEC Movement and Anatomy. The link is in the chat and also the main Embodiment Conference Facebook group as well. And we also have coffee break rooms after. The next session is at 4 p.m. UK time with Madeline Black, the Integrated PSOAS and Diaphragms. And also a reminder, if you are a embodiment enthusiast, hardcore embodiment geek like me, you may be tempted to force feed yourself all these yummy sessions in a short amount of time, but you don't need to do that. You can purchase the entire Embodiment Conference library for yourself to digest in your own time. There are learning lists, audio only, and also notes. And we'll wrap it up with one last thing from Coach Jamie. What is your top tip to stay embodied?
Never stop moving. All right. Our the ability to move, it's so important. And how I look at movement, movement is a form of creative expression. And once you stop moving, I think that it's a snowball effect. So always moving, always exploring, always challenging yourself, be curious. It's so important. Just never stop moving.
Great. Thank you so much. Never stop moving, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us, Coach Jamie and everybody else in the session from around the world. Thank you so much. Looking forward to more learning together. Bye. Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.